God and Reward, The Parable of the Vineyard Workers by Robert C. Newman. There are a number of passages in the Bible that deal with the matter of how God will reward those who serve Him. Some scattered passages in both the Old and New Testament. And among Jesus' parables, there's Jesus' parable of the talents in Matthew 25, and Jesus' parable of the pounds in Luke 19. We won't look here, however, at Jesus' parable of the vineyard workers found in Matthew 20. So let's look at the text of that first of all here. Matthew 20, verses 1 through 13, I believe it is, 16, NIV. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire men to work in his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into the vineyard. About the third hour, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, "You also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went. He went out again about the sixth hour and ninth hour and did the same thing. About the 11th hour, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, "Why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing?" "Because no one has hired us," they answered. He said to them, "You also go and work in my vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last one hired and going on to the first." And the workers who were hired about the 11th hour came, and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each one of them also received a denarius. When they had received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. "These men who were hired last worked only 1 hour," they said, "and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day." But he answered one of them, "Friend, I'm not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the man who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I'm generous?" So the last will be first, and the first will be last. So let's think a little bit about the story. First of all, the situation of the vineyard workers here is pretty much an everyday situation in first century Palestine, where by this point you had large landowners and you had many landless day laborers. And so the landless day laborers would go into the marketplace and wait around for someone to hire them for the day. That would be at least typical. The hiring procedure here, landowner hiring throughout the day, would perhaps not be typical unless it is sufficiently important to harvest the grapes quickly before they should rot, spoil some other way, or turn to raisins. So that appears to be what the owner is doing here. The payment plan is unusual. Paying the same amount to one-hour workers, however, could be seen as just an unusual charity for the unemployed. However, paying them before and in the presence of others, the ones who had worked longer, is certainly asking for trouble. But the owner gives his reasoning to the complaining workers. So let's think a little bit about interpreting the story then. Think about the imagery that's used here. As with other New Testament parables and rabbinic parables, it's common to construct narratives using Old Testament metaphors. Compare Job 7, 1 and 2. Does not man have hard service on earth? Are not his days like those of a hired man, like a slave longing for the evening shadows, or a hired man waiting eagerly for his wages? So Job here is comparing a man's lifetime on earth to something like the day of a day laborer, and working hard during the day, and then finally the evening coming and looking for that as an end to his work and looking for his wages, etc. And then Jesus says something similarly in John 9, 4. As long as it is day, he says, we must do the work of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. There's also a very similar rabbinic parable to this parable here, the vineyard workers. Here it is. A king had a vineyard for which he engaged many laborers, one of whom was especially apt and skillful. What did the king do? He took this laborer from his work, walked through the garden conversing with him. When the laborers came for their hire in the evening, the skillful laborer also appeared among them. and received a full day's wages from the king. The other laborers were angry at this and said, "We have toiled the whole day, while this man has worked but 2 hours. Why does the king give him the full hire even as to us?" The king said to them, "Why are you angry? Through his skill, he has done more in the 2 hours than you have all day." Found in the Jerusalem Talmud, Barakot 2.5c. Well, in both our parable and this rabbinic parable, the same basic images are used. The owner represents God. The workers represent humans. The day represents a human lifespan, if you like. The payment equals one's reward for how they've conducted their life. The lesson is very different in the two, and we're not going to be doing anything with the rabbinic parable, but let me just say, for your interest, if you're inclined that way, that it was a parable given by a rabbi at the death of a very promising young rabbi who died very young, and basically the point was that he had done more in his short lifespan than many others would do in their long lifespan. So very rather different message than we'll see we have here. There are some unusual features here in our particular parable. One of them certainly is the full day's payment to people who had worked only 1 hour, and another perhaps the paying these ones in front of the others so that they saw it. But from the New Testament parables, we can see that unusual or striking features in a parable are often the crux or the main point of the parable. Think, for instance, of the prodigal son, where the father runs to meet the son. In Middle Eastern rural culture, even up to probably today even, fathers with grown sons do not run if they can possibly avoid it. They might run if it was to save their life from marauders or something. So the father running to meet the son is throwing away his dignity in some sense. And that is, in fact, one of the main points of the parable. That God does not stand on his dignity in receiving repentant sinners to himself. In the parable of the two debtors, where the one has been owes the king, 10,000 talents, a humongous astronomical sum, and then after he'd been forgiven, he refused to forgive a person who owed him a good deal, but nothing compared to that. Then when the king hears about it, he cancels the forgiveness. Certainly that's pretty striking, but it's intended to drive home the point that you may think you've got forgiveness from God, but you'll find it's been canceled if you indeed are unwilling to forgive others. And then the parable of tenant farmers, where after a number of the servants have been mishandled and even some killed, that the owner sends a son after all of that. You say, doesn't that sound stupid? And yet, what did God do? God, after having many of his prophets killed, sent his son. Now, there's obviously something else going on, but that's still this unusual, striking feature of the parable, which in many ways is the crux of the parable. There's some big points in dispute about our parable. A question, first of all, do the workers represent only saved people, so all of these people working in the vineyard are believers? Or do they represent both saved and unsaved? They're just humans, creatures created by God who are out living their lives on earth, if you like. And what does the wage represent? Does wage represent the reward for service, which would fit fairly well in with the only saved people? Or does it represent salvation? Well, the context, I suggest, slightly favors the former in each case, that the servants represent believers, and that the parable, payment at the end of the day represents reward. And the reason I suggest this is that the parable follows and is connected to Peter's question in Matthew 19:27. We've left everything to follow you. What then will there be for us? And so Jesus is speaking about rewards for believers, if you like, it sounds like. However, in any case, we're not explicitly told the answer to these questions, and so at least at some level, it's God's intention that that not be as clear as it could be. The parable, I suggest, has important lessons which don't depend on answering these two particular questions. Are these people saved or unsaved? Is this a reward or is this salvation? So, let's see. Some lessons from the parable. Well, first of all, look at the payment. These people all got the same denarius, but that was no less than was just for any of them. It was not less than what the people who started at the beginning of the day had agreed to work for, so they aren't getting less than they agreed to work for. So lesson number one, I think, is this. God will never be unjust. You remember how Abraham, in his beginning of his bargaining session over what to do about Sodom and Gomorrah, said, "Will the judge of all the earth, won't the judge of the all of the earth do right?" And the answer, of course, is yes. Part of the purpose, no doubt, of the last judgment is to vindicate God's decisions on what he's going to do with each person. He doesn't need to vindicate it. He knows. He knows he's just, etc., but it will be obvious to others. Look at the details of the bargaining. The first group bargains with the landowner to get a satisfactory wage, which they then agree to go work for. The second group, here I'm grouping the all of the middle groups here that come in at various times during the day, except the last group, they accept the promise to be paid justly. They're depending upon the justness of the owner. And the third, with the day nearly shot, just accepts the opportunity to work, okay? With feeling presumably they'll get something. Then when everything's settled out, all receive the same amount, one denarius, but the last gets the best hourly wage, a denarius for just an hour's work, and the second group the next, and the first the worst, since it's a denarius for, I don't know, 10 or 12 hours' work, huh? Lesson number two, I suggest, you will get your best deal with God by trusting him, not by bargaining with him. Now, since we don't have a lot of feedback from God, we can't tell whether he accepts our bargains or not, but the picture is largely that of attitude, I think. If you want to receive the best deal, we might say, trust God, right? Because part of what God rewards is attitudes, as well as actions. Workers complain. The workers are unhappy that others got a better deal than they did. Well, that itself is a lesson. Lesson three, we all tend to complain when somebody else gets something we didn't. Back in my earlier years, I went to a church that, like many evangelical churches, had a vacation Bible school, and like many of them, had parents and other church members bring cookies for the have the kids have a snack, if you like, during the days of the vacation Bible school. But the pastor warned all of the parents and others in the church, don't bring homemade cookies. And as adults, we might say, why on earth not? Homemade cookies are good, etc. Usually good, okay? And the answer is, they're not all the same size. And that the kids will start to compare their cookies with one another. And the ones who get smaller cookies will complain. So you get store-bought cookies that are all machine-made and they're all exactly the same size. And that substantially decreases the complaints. Huh? We all tend to complain when somebody else gets something we didn't. Finally, there's the owner's answer, and each of his remarks is a lesson, if you like. Lesson four, God never cheats us. We always get at least as much as we deserve. You do not need to fear that you'll be cheated. What you may need to fear sometimes is that you will get what you deserve. Huh? Lesson five, God may wish to give another person something he doesn't give us. Isn't this the essence of grace? Grace is giving something, giving someone something they don't deserve. And you can claim, well, I deserve this more than he deserved it, but if you didn't deserve it either, then that's God's grace. And certainly it's a part of the antithesis of grace that we start comparing ourselves with one another and complaining because we didn't get the most grace. God may wish to give another something he doesn't give us. Isn't this the essence of grace? Lesson six, there's always certain freedom in disposing of one's property. Otherwise, it's not really one's own. The fact that the landowner had agreed to give the people who worked all day a denarius a day doesn't prohibit him from giving charity to others who had not been hired. And who knows what reasons there had been why they'd not been hired, but it was the owner's decision. It was the owner's right, if you like. It's his own property to dispose of it the way he will, and that's the way he chose to dispose of it, to give an equal amount to each of these persons. Now, I'm not absolutely sure what that guarantees for us in regard to reward. I think we've got warrant from other passages that there will be differences of reward, so we'll leave it right here. Lesson 7, beware of covetousness and jealousy, because Jesus has told us the last will be first, and the first will be last. So people who are covetous, jealous, have a bargain with God attitude, may be rather disappointed, whereas those who are trusting God and who are generous and such, they may find that God has given them something very, very good. Well, that's our quick tour of the parable of the vineyard workers. And my advice to you is work hard and trust God. And if you do these things, I think you will not be disappointed with how things come out. As we pointed out elsewhere in other PowerPoint talks, finally, our status with God is going to depend upon His grace, depending upon our trusting in what His Son has done to pay for our sins, trusting in God's provision for our sin. And that I have not dealt with here, but many of my other PowerPoint talks deal with that. Thank you for your attention, and that is where we will quit today.